Welcome to the Scottish Watches podcast. We have a full house today. We do have a very special co-host, somebody you'll have heard before on the show, somebody you'll have heard before on many of the videos that we have produced over the last year and a bit. Good friend of the show, he's met us in person numerous times when we were allowed to, when lockdowns weren't an issue. He even came to the last ever Red Bar meet in Scotland, the last ever Red Bar meet, I think probably in the UK, if not the world, just before the lockdowns nearly a year ago. We have Pietro here from the Limited Edition. How are you doing, Pietro?
Hi, Ricky. I'm really well. What about you?
Surviving. We are recording this as we come up to the 1 year anniversary of the last time you came up here. It was a year ago. Who can think it? A year back.
A bit of pressure there, really. You start saying, you know, we need to replace Rick in a way. And then we talk about that legendary event in Glasgow. The day before, I think the world realized that there was a bit of an issue. So, yeah.
Yeah, we were having a joke saying, oh, is this the last time we'll be able to shake hands? Well, it turns out, yes, it was.
It was very much so.
Yeah. Anyway, no, we've all managed to survive. It's been an interesting year. It's ups and downs, as we both know. Some brands have flourished. Some brands have unfortunately diminished. But we are here. We're fighting fit. We're moving the cause forward and the stuff that you're doing, both with us and yourself and Johnny and everybody else. Fantastic, the stuff that you're doing. You're pushing forward the independent brands, the voices that aren't generally heard in fighting for the little guy and the not so little guy, as we're about to find out. Now, on the line, we also have another couple of interesting gentlemen, but you know them better than I do, Pietro. So why don't you do the introductions for us?
Absolutely. It is my pleasure as we complete a little bit our mission today of introducing a brand that I absolutely love, which is Armin Strom, a Swiss-based in-house manufacturer based in Bien in Switzerland. And we have in numerous time had the opportunity to showcase some of the watches, thanks to you, Ricky, and the great work you've done in taking impeccable photography and videos about those watches. And yes, we were only missing the faces behind this really, really good success that we have been witnessing over the last few years since the Michel family, and Serge Michel is here with us, together with Claude Greisler, took over the brand, which was already known, you know, to the hardcore lovers of independent watchmaking, but they managed to take it to the next step over the last 10 years. So Claude and Serge are here with us today, so very much full room.
Yeah, indeed it is. Now, I'm going to, as I said before we started recording, I'm going to have to take things way back, almost to the point where I'd never handled or seen one of your watches, because before Pietro managed to get a couple of them up to me personally to have a look at, I had no personal experience. It was all photography, it was all video, it was all reading things online. So to take it back the way so that the listeners that are joining in just now can get the basics, why don't you give us an introduction to Armin Strom and, you know, the philosophy of the company and where it came from?
Yeah, Serge is probably, the best person to answer this question and to take us into the world of Armin Strom.
Okay, hi from my side. Hi, Ricky. Hi, Pietro. Thanks for having us. Thanks for having Armin Strom to the call. And yes, Armin Strom goes way back in the history, a bit longer than Claude and myself took over. Mr. Armin Strom, he started his watch career in the 60s and specialized himself as a master in skeleton watches. And this is also what he really is known for. He opened his workshop in a small town called Burgdorf. Burgdorf, the door to the Emmental. So we always say the Emmental is not only known for the good cheese worldwide, it's also known for high quality products.
That's a very good point.
And also, of course, with Mr. Armin Strom.
Which country was that?
It's in Switzerland. It's called the Emmental. So most of the people outside from Switzerland, they only know the Emmental for the cheese. You know, the famous Emmentaler cheese with the big holes.
Right.
It's a skeletonized kind of cheese.
Skeletonized kind of cheese, exactly. Maybe that's where Armin Strom gets his inspiration from. He didn't talk about this yet. Since Claude and myself, we grew up in Burgdorf. That's actually the story. We have the same age. We didn't go to school together, but we were childhood friends. So we know each other for quite a while, let's say. Claude's family, they had also a shop where they sell glasses just in front, just next to Mr. Arminstrom. So he was a very close. He was very close to the Strom family, and so am I, because my father, he used to buy watches in Burgdorf at Mr. Arminstrom's workshop as well. So I had the opportunity already as a child to see his incredible craftsmanship when I was 8, 9 years old. So I really remember this, going down the basement and seeing Arminstrom working on his incredible skeletonized watches. So this is when my passion started, and also I'm sure also Claude's passion started when he just walked by the shop and went into the shop, talked to Mr. Arminstrom and the wife Anna Maria Strom, both very nice, passionate people. So time goes on. Mr. Arminstrom had the chance to work for Omega, so he did a lot of skeletonized watches for Omega. And then it was early 2006 when we started to talk, his family, my family, if this could be something to take over the brand name Arminstrom and bring it to the future, because Arminstrom was at that time already way over 60 years old. Most of the people, they retire at this age, but he still wanted to work, but he wanted to know what's in the future with the brand Arminstrom.
I already have a question, Serge, if you don't mind, on Arminstrom himself, this obviously iconic personality of the world of watchmaking. Is it a legend, a myth, or is it true that before Arminstrom, there were no classes in Switzerland for skeletonization as a technique?
So yes, definitely. So Arminstrom is definitely known, very, very known for skeletonizing, called the master of skeletonized watch in our days, because when Arminstrom started to skeletonize watches, that was in a period where most of the people didn't believe in mechanical watches anymore. Imagine this was in the 80s, 90s, where the first quartz movement came. A lot of watches were made with batteries instead of mechanical movements. So
followed by the time when George Daniels had to put pressure on the Swiss makers to introduce the coaxial escape as well as a thing that would have revolutionized the world of watchmaking. Okay. So yeah, the wrong time in a way for passion for mechanical devices.
I think that this is also why they celebrated the mechanics. I mean, they had Arminstrom started to open up the dials. Daniels, who was really talking about the movement, about escapements. So I think this was maybe out of their passion for mechanic watches, that they were strongly believing that there's still room for mechanical watches. And yeah, those people were the independents back in those days.
Obviously, my podcast with Jean-Claude Biver, that at the time was obviously a big personality already when he took over Blancpain, and he said we needed to make a big statement of in terms of saying Blancpain never made a quartz watch and will never do in the future. So it was really a black and white situation where watchmakers were putting themselves on one side or the other side of the fence, and of course Arminstrom was one of those that kept believing in mechanical watchmaking.
Yeah,
for sure. He never had the idea to create a quartz watch at all. So absolutely.
Good. Now, the interesting thing I've noted there straight away is there's a lot of brands that are named after a person, but they have practically nothing to do with that person. That person died many, many generations ago. And this is an almost a handoff. So it's a master at his work, somebody that, I don't know, was a pioneer in something you guys met, knew about when you were younger, and carried on his family tradition and name. So is he, not to be morbid, is he still with us or has he passed on?
He's still with us. He's still with
Brilliant.
Us.
Good. Yeah. That's even better.
He's over 80. No, but that's actually a question we got asked, Claude and myself, quite many times. Why Arminstrom? Why? Because the brand as it is today, I'm sure we'll talk about it later as well. So we still do absolutely the philosophy of Mr. Arminstrom's heritage. But the brand changed so much, and it's at least Claude and myself standing behind the brand. So there was the question, why Arminstrom? But I think it's exactly the romantic behind it. It's really the history from the early 60s until today, which mm-hmm. goes on. Of course, it changes, like everything changes these days, but it's not just that we just open the drawer and we're looking for an old watchmaker's name and say that's now us.
Yeah, that's often the case. It's a money grab. Not that business is a problem. Business is here to put food on the table. But no, it's a bit more of a heartwarming story to learn how you guys have done that.
I mean, great question you put out there, because it's true that most of the contemporary brands, they take inspiration somehow from the past, and they always, and I was one of them when I was working for Graham Watches, for example, we were always thinking, oh, I wonder what George Graham would think about what we are doing these days, you know, if he'd be proud, or if he could only give us a feedback. You do have that. So can I ask the question, do you exchange with Mr. Armin Strom, and is he proud of what you're doing, and how does that relationship work at the moment? It's fascinating for me to know more about that.
Still very close. I mean, he had some health issue, but he's doing fine again. So actually, he's looking forward to visit us soon in Biel. He still lives in Burgdorf, by the way. Well, the manufacturer now already moved to Biel. But he's extremely proud, of course, to have his name on the watch worldwide now, and seeing Armin Strom as a brand, really getting a brand, because he was more he was a watchmaker. He did very limited pieces a year, and we know the evolution really is to branding, to a brand. And he is proud, and he's giving us feedback, and he sees that we still live and that we still are creating what his passion was before. Doing skeletonized watches in a much more modern way.
2006 is where things kicked off with you both. What started the project off? Was there an idea? Was there a watch in mind? Or did you just want to see where the road would take you?
It was definitely started with passion. I was never meant to be a watchmaker, or was never the idea also of my family to go into the watch industry. So really, when I had the opportunity, I knew I really wanted to do it. But I needed somebody next to me who had the knowledge, not only of the industry, but mainly for making watches, creating watches. Of course, I knew Claude, and I knew that Claude did all the studies in watchmaking. And since we were friends in the early days, so I just called him. And then this, when it started, and there was many discussions of where to go, and Claude said, oh, we have to go a different direction. You have to be an independent manufacturer. If we have the possibility, we need to produce our own movements. Of course, I was a bit shocked before. It was just high numbers in my head of investing in all the machinery. But luckily enough, he convinced myself, and then we started the project.
And how much that choice paid back these days, you know, 15 years down the line, when, of course, independent watchmaking has become a big thing and has become a protagonist in the scene of watchmaking in general. So obviously, it didn't probably look like a wise investment at the time, but look at how things have panned out now. So it's very interesting.
So Claude, you joined 2007, huh? Mm-hmm. Just maybe not even a year later from our decision. And then we worked on a so-called Watch the Regulator, which maybe, Claude, you can talk about. This was your first Armin Strom piece, actually.
So when we started, so Armin Strom was still working in the workshop, and our idea was my idea was first to learn the skeletonized technique from Mr. Armin Strom, to make sure that we have the knowledge and the experience of Mr. Armin Strom. So the first year was more or less hand skeletonizing, hand filing, engraving the movements in the way that Armin Strom did it, because his philosophy in skeletonizing was very unique. And so first year we took existing movement. We had the chance that Armin Strom had a huge stock of vintage movements, which he collected over the years. So we took existing movements, made small series of hand skeletonized watches. And then slowly, slowly, of course, Serge and myself, we were close to 30, 29 years old, and we wanted to have maybe a bit more modern looking watch than the classic skeletonizing. So there we came up with this idea of taking a base ETA movement and then building up our own module, which was then called the regulator. So we had the hour hand, the minute hand, and the second hand had his own display, And we had a retrograde. We were building a retrograde date on top of it. So that was our very first, let's say, half manufactured, half ETA based watch, which we made together.
Right. So that almost sounds a little bit like the Karate Kid. You started off wax on, wax off, doing the skeletonization before you then moved to the whole building, the entire movement and the modules yourselves. Now, for anyone that doesn't know, what exactly is the process of skeletonizing a watch or a movement? Because to the layman, to the everyman, they might think it's just a case of you take a Dremel or a drill and you take bits of metal out. It's obviously a little bit more involved than that. So what's the quick explanation of skeletonizing something? What goes into that?
Well, it was a technique which only master watchmakers were able to do, because they have the knowledge of a watchmaker had to be very high to understand where I can take off materials on an existing movement, or where I still have to let a few, or where I still have to let the metal stay on the bridges. And this was really reserved to the master watchmakers who were able to skeletonize the movement. Because back in those days, without CNC machines, nobody was able to do their own movement. They always have to have, they bought the base movement, the main plate, the bridges, the wheels. And then from there, they started to do either do classic decoration like the Geneva stripes, or really the masters, they were able to cut off the non-useful metal.
Formula One design, making the cars more lightweight and using the ingenuity and the brain power to accomplish that without detrimental problems to the watch falling in itself.
Skeletonization is about watchmakers don't like dials. So getting rid of the dial and making everything else beautiful.
Moving on from obviously doing that to begin with, what was the first releases that came out?
We had the idea of this regulator watch, which we started with the philosophy of having four different models limited to 100 pieces. We started with the idea of having four materials. It was fire, earth, water, and air was the concept back then. So each for 100 pieces, the same watch. And then, of course, there was zero distribution. So when we started, when we took over, there was no retailer because Armstrong was selling out of his shop, was mouse to mouse. He had his clients in Switzerland. He had clients in the Italian, Northern Italian part. He had a few clients in the USA, but never had a retail, also never had a retail strategy at all. So we of course needed to start to do promotion. So we started to travel, just got in the plane, did researches and traveled around the world and trying to sell the watches. This is actually how we started, and slowly but surely the success came. Of course, we always went to Basel World to the show, had a lot of contacts there. But I remember the first days during Basel, Claude and myself, we probably had one or two meetings a day. So there was really groundwork to do. So
I remember, Serge, the first time we met on the Red Square in Moscow, and you were on a tour to get Armin Strom to be known in obviously showcased in Russia at the time. So I feel I have lived.
What was the levels of interest from the watch media? Obviously, it's not like it is just now. We didn't have Instagram and all the connectivity that we currently have at our fingertips, I suppose.
I think the beginning was still hard and tough. Of course, the watch media was always open to come and look. And as you just said, back then it was very traditional. It was the few magazines in the market. We had good contacts to the Swiss magazines, maybe in Germany. But the success and we saw that we are going to have a good future was really when we launched the next model, which was a fully in-house calibered. The regulator was, because it was so different from what Armin Strom did before, and then it was just the ETA movement with the module. It was not wow for the industry. It was, okay, they're two young kids, they're trying to do something new on the tradition of Mr. Armin Strom, but it was already a really, really different product. But then the next step, when we came with our fully in-house caliber, ARM09, then I think also the media, they really started to get more and more interested.
I suppose nowadays things are a lot more easier to enter into the marketplace, especially new brands. We get emails on a daily basis from companies that are just started up that we've never heard of, and maybe 1 in 10 look as if they've got the legs to take things forward, because everybody thinks it's easy to make a watch. The world seems to think this, and I suppose it is easy to buy parts and put them together from far away places, but you guys have done it differently. So the watches that you're most known for, probably, well, the one obviously that Pietro has sent up is the most current one I've seen, and that's the Gravity Equal Force. But there is a word that is synonymous with your brand, and that is resonance. So what's the story there? How did that idea come together, and what was the design process in building resonance watches? And what is that? What does that mean?
Well, resonance, first of all, resonance means that you do synchronize two movements in one watch. And by synchronizing the two movements, you get a better average speed, a better timekeeping out of the watch. But that's a very historical thing. I mean, Christian Huygens, the inventor of the pendulum, already described the phenomenon of resonance, because when he was inventing the pendulum clocks, he had two clocks sitting on a table, and he saw that they do somehow synchronize each other. And by synchronizing each other, they do hold the same frequency, which in physics is known as resonance. And my background is a bit, so I first did an education as a watchmaker, then graduated as an engineer in watch restoration with high complicated watches. And there, resonance was quite a big topic. Because when you do your studies, you have to learn everything about escapements, about tourbillons, about resonances, or whatever was made in the watch industry. We went through constant force mechanisms, fuse chains, and so on. So we had to understand everything. And resonance was always really fascinating to me. But there was the solution with two balance wheels was not there. There was Breguet, who worked on a resonance pocket watch. There was François Bourgeon, who worked on, who launched 1990 a resonance, the first ever resonance wristwatch. But our approach to resonance was completely different. What I had in mind to improve in resonance was based on the very first phenomenon of Christian Huygens. And so it took us more than 3 years to develop this this mechanism of resonance. And it was in watchmaking, it's a breakthrough that Armin Strom was able to improve the technique of resonance, which was only touched by a few, of the best watchmakers.
Yeah, I have a question on that, Claude. It's very interesting why so few watchmakers, even master watchmakers, ever dared to get into resonance. So because of your studies, I would like you to let us know why you think is that. And secondly, yeah, for those that are listening, there are some great videos on YouTube that have nothing to do with watchmaking, but you can see metronomes, a series of, you know, dozens of metronomes lined up together. You start them at a very different frequency. And then after a period of time, they kind of eventually sync up to the same frequency. And that's a great way to visualize the phenomenon of resonance.
As long as they can communicate in between them, which is in physics known as the shared mode of motion. So that means if you have if you can add a third frequency, let's say the example of Pietro, when you have two metronomes sitting on the floor and they beat in a different frequency, they will not really synchronize. Because their difference of frequency is too far away. If you put them on a moving board, let's say if you put them on a flexible board where they can communicate in between them, then they will synchronize and they will build up a very stable environment of resonance, which was actually, if we go back in history of resonance, there was Henri Janvier, the famous French clockmaker, who was able to reach with a pendulum clock a proper resonance mechanism. And he described the phenomenon of resonance or the way he achieved resonance was that he mentioned that he shared the suspension of the two pendulums. And when he started to share the suspension of the two pendulums, he reached a proper resonance. And sharing a suspension means you transmit energy, or you create like a mechanical connection in between the two pendulums. And that's exactly what we did on our resonance. So we have the resonance clutch spring, which is a spring which is visible on top of the two balance wheels. And thanks to the shape of this clutch spring, we can build up a very stable environment of resonance, which is also very shock resistant. And
Ricky, I don't think Claude needs to answer the other part of the question on whether why so few watchmakers ventured into resonance.
Yeah, I think they're getting
clear.
That now. Yeah, no, that explains a lot. And for timekeeping, is it a little bit, you can tell us the truth, is it a little bit like a tourbillon where you don't really need it, it's done because you can?
It definitely makes the watch more accurate because there's a lot of things going on in a mechanical movement. The energy which is delivered by the mainspring is not a constant force. This we know because there are constant force complications out there. So that means that the energy which goes from the barrel through the gear train to the escapement is not a constant force. There's always up and downs and up and downs due to gear train mistakes or just the development of the mainspring. So a lot of small issues during the day. And by synchronizing two movements and bringing them to beat in the same frequency in a stable environment, which we have achieved with the resonance clutch spring, we can hold the same frequency. That means if one of them slows down, the other one will keep his beat and tell him through the resonance clutch spring, okay, hold on, you have to keep the frequency. And this is what makes the watch very stable. Also, if you have a shock, we have one balance turning clockwise, the other one turning counterclockwise. And in a wristwatch, if you get an acceleration, one of them will be speed up a little bit, the other one will automatically slow down. But thanks to this environment, they will keep the frequency. And timekeeping for me is not just how accurate at the end of the day. How accurate the watch is depends on temperature, of how the watchmaker adjusts the watch. But if you go a little bit deeper into the watch and you see, does the watch really have the same frequency the whole day? Yes, a resonance watch does keep the same frequency during the day. But all the other watches, they have like a variation of frequency. And what we see by ±2 seconds a day, it's just the average which we take out of it.
That's good. Another term that you brought up there was equal force. And that's another term that you guys are quite famous for. So do you want to explain what that one is for me?
Yeah, our equal force mechanism is the first ever built Maltese cross on automatic winding watch. So a Maltese cross or Geneva cross is a mechanism who is equalizing the energy in the barrel. So we have the going barrel. In the going barrel, we have the mainspring. And the mainspring, if we start to wind up the mainspring, we have at the beginning, there's no energy. Then slowly the energy goes up. Then during a few turns, the energy keeps quite stable. And then the end, we have a peak of energy. And in the hand winding watches, even in the early hand winding pocket watches, watchmakers used a Geneva cross to to equalize the energy in the barrel. So what they did, they cut off the first few turns in the barrel and the last few turns in the barrel, just to make sure that you take the best range of the mainspring. But that's something which couldn't be applied to automatic winding watches because of the winding mechanism. And what's the invention in the Eco Force is that it's the first ever built watch with a Maltese cross or a Geneva cross stop work function on the automatic winding barrel.
So how did you accomplish that? What was the trick that was involved in getting that to work?
Well, the trick is, I don't know if it gets too technical, you can stop me, huh? But when you wind up a hand winding watch, at the end, the mainspring blocks somehow because the watch is fully wound. That's something which never happened in an automatic winding watch, because you have the mainspring who has this slip function at the end of the winding.
The bridle slips.
Yes, exactly. Because once the watch is fully wound, the rotor will continuously to wind up the mainspring. And therefore, they have invented this slip function in the barrel. What we had to do in this moment, where the automatic mainspring starts to slip in the barrel, we have to declutch the Maltese cross. And that's the biggest trick in this Maltese cross function. And that's something which was never done before, because let's say it's a declutch mechanism for the automatic winding barrel.
For those like me, Claude, that need simple explanation, basically the amazing thing that the gravity equal force does, it's got an in-house manufactured system and patented as well in the system you just described, that is able to collect energy and distribute it uniformly in a way that then the information comes to the timekeeper as a constant flow of power, as opposed to alternating flow of energy that will cause inaccuracy, no?
Yes, exactly. That's right. It's a little bit less technique. That's my explanation, but it's true. Sometimes I got a bit lost in if I talk about watches, you know, if you're so much into watches. And for me, sometimes it's difficult to break down. There's so much invention involved in a barrel like this, you know, that we spend hours and hours by rethinking a barrel which watchmakers do use since a few hundred years in the watch. And then the young company Armstrong comes one day and we say, okay, listen, we have a problem in the barrel. We should improve the barrel.
The point is that because of your explanation, we understand that it's high horology, haute horologerie, as we would call it. Mm. But the miracle about the gravity equal force is that you managed to price it at a level that, you know, for fully in-house movement of that complexity and that level of finishing, because we have not even started to talk about the level of finishing.
Pietro,
that Armstrong,
you're getting ahead. I was about to bring this up. I was going to say,
okay,
we're talking about all these crazy high complications, firsts in watchmaking, but I've had a look through your specific section on the limited edition website, and you do watches from around about 7,000 up the way to $250,000. So it's not as if it is all super, super expensive watches. Your entry levels are really good. And even the Gravity Equal Force, the ones that we've had up before, they're only 13,000 there or thereabouts. And you're getting such quality, such workmanship. And it's something that's unique on the wrist. We always try to compare to what everybody knows. So around about the 13,000. Pietro, what would that be in the state? For example, a Breguet or a Blancpain, what would be the equivalent price point there for a watch there, and then compare that across to what you get here?
You know, there are easy comparisons out there, and in the news, of course, there is the case of the Nautilus now 5711 being discontinued and all the craziness going around that, and Royal Oaks that are impossible to get, and other brands, you know, like of the likes of Moser, Chapek and Armstrong taking advantage because they are in the position of offering a product that has an inner value that Claude has just illustrated, that is now perceived to be higher than some of the stars that are in that price bracket. And that's a big point about independent watchmaking. I always say the delta between retail price and inner value is slimmer than what you would think or you would find on a more industrially manufactured timepiece that you could possibly get from another brand that is maybe so important because of design features rather than necessarily the mechanical advancement. So that's how I see it.
Yeah. Is your phone on vibrate now?
No.
I thought I could hear someone's phone vibrating. No?
No, it's dead.
Okay, just checking. We've obviously asked the two experts. It's now time to ask Pietro some questions. Tell us, why was it you decided to get involved with Armstrong? Why did you bring this brand into your house of different luxury watches, different independents? What was it that struck a chord with you to bring them on board?
For me, it's been, I've been sharing this journey that Claude and Serge have been going through, as I said, I think since 2012 when I met Serge the first time in Russia. And he was kind of dreaming and sharing his ambition with me of creating an in-house manufacturing, not micro production, but very limited production to be able to offer value to the final customers. Because final customers and collectors sometimes are not offered value. They are sometimes offered hype. They're sometimes offered, stories. But in this case, their very empirical approach of coming out with something that was not overdone, like skeletonization. If you look around, there are so few examples of beautiful skeletonizations being carried out at scale, and at the same time keeping the quantities absolutely limited, mastering all the phases of watchmaking in-house, and proposing a price that is actually respectful of what a collector would perceive as great value. And I think it is refreshing seeing that 10 years down the line, that's exactly what Armin Strom is doing. And that's why we have chosen Armin Strom, and I'm so grateful that they have chosen us as well, to celebrate our fifth anniversary at the limited edition, 5 years of enhancing independent watchmaking, with creating a special limited edition for us on the Gravity Equal Force that we have launched before the end of 2020, which is for me a magnificent piece, and it makes me very humbled and proud.
You're good at answering the question I'm about to ask in your own words. So moving on to that limited edition piece, you've got the choice of every brand that you deal with, and you have done, because you've got a steeped history in Swiss watchmaking and worldwide watchmaking through Graham, Richemont and everything else that's led you to where you are today. And you picked Armin Strom to do this release. But there's also some changes. It's not just Armin Strom that's been involved in this. There is another, artisan of the craft that's helped with some of the work on the front. Do you want to explain a little bit about that and why that release that you've got is different from the previous one?
Yeah, I will let Claude and Serge elaborate on this, because yes, of course, as clever as Armin Strom is, they master everything in-house, but they're not blind to what's happening on the market. And they've worked on collaborations like the one with Kari Voutilainen and Comblemin, which is obviously the dial manufacturer belonging to Kari Voutilainen, to manufacture some of the finishing of their own timepieces. So in terms of that, I think also the company's been very clever, because in the end they offer extra value to the customer. So I don't know if Serge and Claude want to elaborate on this point that is very important, I think.
Yeah, I think it's being open, being open to collaboration, being open to, we know where we are the specialists. We are a specialist in making complications and making movements from A to C. But when it comes to the speciality of Kari Voutilainen and doing the skiosage, then he is definitely the expert. We don't even try to make the skiosage. He has the knowledge, and so as the watch industry is small, so we know each other. So we just started to talk to Kari, and he immediately agreed to do this project with us for Pietro and the limited edition. And I think we are all proud of how the watch turned and how it came out. Yes, I think it's really about being open in partnerships to reach the for us at the end the perfect watch. Bring in expertise also from the outside.
Was there a big fight between you guys and Kari then? Because you want to remove and skeletonize and take everything away, and he was wanting to put stuff back in to make it look nice.
No, the base model is is our Gravity Eco Force, which has the space which allows to add this gearshaft from Kari Voutilainen, so we don't have to compromise at all.
Mm-hmm. Good. Great looking piece. I've seen the original. I've seen that one, and I would love to have them again. Was it around about 13,000 plus VAT for the normal one? And then your special edition is only slightly more expensive, but you're using, is it rhodium and gold plating in the bridges as well?
Yes, there is a special finishing. There is a crown that is in solid gold as well. And there is this pattern of guilloche that has been worked out by Kari exclusively for us, which adorns the main plate of the movement. So yeah, slightly more expensive. We're talking £15,750 before VAT.
I think it's the philosophy of the philosophy of this collection, so-called the System 78 collection, where we really want to create accessible, independent watchmaking. Resonance, of course, we won't be able to make a Resonance watch at that price level, but within the which is a collection by itself, the system, Resonance collection, of course, we have the masterpieces, and within the System 78 collection, where we invest these days really much of our engineering power also for the future, because we know that there are so many passionate watch collectors out there. They really appreciate independent watchmaking, but there was no brand at all or no watch for them to buy at such a price level as we offer. And this is, it should really be the philosophy of this System 78 collection.
There's not a micro rotor at that price, let alone the special D-clutch system and all the
rest.
I forgot
to mention that part. Yeah, it's got the micro. I'm only thinking of the front of it. We haven't even talked about the back of these things. If you guys are listening along at home, wondering what the hell we're talking about, you need to visually see this. So in our show notes, thanks to our great intern, Ms. L, we will have photography and we'll also have links to the videos that we've already got online and some of these things that Pietro has mentioned about Constant Force System, about Resonance, and the particular watches that me and Pietro obviously worked on and shot before. Now, Pietro, offline, you told me that the guys at Armstrong also look after their customer more than just furnish them with a great watch at a great price. They offer the experience of being able to go across, meet them, and do tours of the factory and see how these things are actually physically put together. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. For me, that is fundamental, having experienced that several times personally. When we talk about offering value, and we are always trying to point our collectors towards those brands that offer exceptional value, besides the intrinsic value of the product itself, is the experience that relates to Armin Strom, how these guys have managed in 10 years to put together a fully in-house integrated manufacturing, and how you can also go and see and experience it. We tried humbly with the limited edition. Claude was good enough to be with us for a virtual factory tour that we have done a few months back, but there is nothing like when travel will be allowed again to go to BN and experience firsthand.
Oh, that sounds really good. Is that virtual thing online that people can check out?
Yes, on our IGTV and on our YouTube account as well.
Brilliant, that's good. Channel. And another thing, I'm trying to remember all the stuff you've told me, Pietro, over the last year, but I remember we had a chat that Armin Strom, they allow you the facility a bit like buying a Porsche or buying any sort of luxury product or car. You can go in and you can change the colour of the seats and whatnot. Is that available on all watches, the configuration system, or is it just on specific ones?
Yeah, let Serge elaborate on that.
Yeah, but I think it's just what you just said. It's because we can do it. We also started to offer it. And we, in the world of, especially in independent watchmaking, there's a lot of collectors that want to be creative as well, so they have their own ideas of colors, of finishings, all kind of ideas, and instead of handling all the requests one by one, we started to offer an online tool where you can models, not all our collections are available to customize, but certain collections are. So we can choose colors, style colors, strap, of course, finishing, PVD coatings on movement parts, things like this. And yes, it's because at the end, every watch is done one by one. We're not doing series of 100 watches that look the same. It's we have an order, then we start a process. And at the end, if we put the blue dial or a black dial or a yellow dial, it's for us, it's not more additional work to do.
But very much is like ordering a car. You don't have a stock room of all these watches sitting. Everything is a custom job. So you offer that facility because it's available, because everything's put together at the time somebody orders.
Yeah, correct.
And there's no extra charge for anything like that?
As long as it's within the online tool, then it's equal pricing.
Excellent. Okay, I suppose the next question to round things off, because it's been a very, very quick hour so far. What does the future hold for you guys? What have you got on the drawing board? Have you got developments of existing lines and watches, or have you got some crazy new stuff that you're about to unleash in the world as well?
Yeah, it's about all of that, I think, but I Let Claude answer.
So yes, we as you mentioned, we are definitely improving on our movements. There is we have some good ideas, working on new approaches in watchmaking, new movements. We also do some upgrades on existing collections. I think the fact that thanks to COVID, we had to stay in the factory and we couldn't travel. We were really able to work hard on our existing models, on new models. So it was actually a very, very exciting year because I've never had so much time to spend on the computer, in the workshop. So for me, it was actually a very, very creative year, the coronavirus, which gave us the opportunity to really focus on watchmaking, not because if you own or if you run the company, it's also a lot of traveling, a lot of presenting the brand. But thanks to the situation, we were able to really, really work on exciting stuff. There's a lot of cool things coming.
So instead of watching Netflix, you got busy designing new watches for people. Yeah, that's brilliant.
Which is much better than Netflix.
There will be a documentary once on Netflix about Armin Strom, I'm sure.
Yeah, fantastic. So Pietro, anything else you want to add in?
No, I think it's been great. One last question would be about the resonance, because I know it's a big aspirational piece for a lot of collectors. Can you share anything with us? If the resonance, of course, the movement, I think after the efforts you've made, will be an iconic movement for you and for the brand for the next multiple years to come. But what about the presentation of the case, materials, design, layouts? Are you gonna build on what is existing, or are you sticking to what is at the moment in the collection?
Well, there will definitely be a facelift of the Mirrored Force Resonance, something which will be launched normally by the end of the year. It's the same movement, because the movement performance is so incredibly good that we decided to not move on the movement. There will be some changes in height, in diameter, and a small facelift on the case and the dial. Small things, but yeah, very, very good result.
Nice. Look forward to it.
Thank you very much. I didn't know how this hour was going to be, because usually with these types of shows, I don't do too much research, because if I do that, then I've got a knowledge base that maybe the listener doesn't have. So I came in completely new, only having seen a couple of pieces, and you've already blown my mind with some of the technologies that you guys have worked on, created and mastered. So I recommend that everybody that's listening to check this out. We're obviously going to have lots of pictures, links, videos and whatnot in the show notes, but go across to the Armin Strom site, have a look through YouTube at some of the other stuff, and check out their Instagram. And Pietro, if people want to find out more about what you've been up to, because you seem to do more work than I do, where can they go and check your stuff out as well?
It's because I'm always hiding, you know, the stuff that is actually helping me to do all the things that we do, and I pretend it's all down to me, but it's not. Yes, the world of independent watchmaking is actually, there's always something happening. So I like to think that if you are into this this niche, you should find on www.thelimitededition.co.uk all your informations. I can't believe I just said www, but anyway. And then our Instagram account, which is always very lively, it's thelimitededition.uk. And you can communicate with us through WhatsApp as well. And the number on the website is actually my number. So if you want to send any comments, I'll be available on hand. And I have to thank you, Ricky, for the space given to me. And thank Armin Strom and Serge and Claude for this great hour together.
Yep. Thank you very much, guys. It's been a pleasure. As I say, I've been brought up to speed on so much stuff that I didn't actually know that I wanted to learn about. And that is always the best way when I speak to people that work for companies, that it's more than just a job. You know, it's a passion. It's something that you guys live and breathe every single day instead of clocking in at 9 and then leaving at 5. So I do appreciate the time. If people want to find out more about Armin Strom, where is it they should go then?
Yeah, I think it's quite simple. There's arminstrom.com. We have YouTube channels. We have also the Instagram accounts.
Perfect. That's easy. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, guys. Thank you, Pietro, for coming on. And if you are listening to this, you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe. We do 2 podcasts a week. It's always varied. It's always different. Sometimes we've got interview guests like we have today. Sometimes it's just me and a co-host. Sometimes it's a little bit crazy and out there. We do some live recordings on YouTube. We do stuff on Clubhouse sometimes as well. So check that out. Also the website, that's where you can find all our news, reviews, previews and articles. That's scottishwatches.co.uk. We're big on Instagram. That's where we post the most amount of stuff, at Scottish Watches. And we've got a main YouTube channel, which is obviously called Scottish Watches as well. There you can find some of the previous videos that me and Pietro have done, either in person or virtually across the internet.
Ricky, do you want to share with the guys when we're going to have the drunk podcast with Armin Strom? Now we can share with them. Now they believe us.
I didn't know we were doing one with them. I usually break people in gently and then introduce that idea, because it took a while to get the other guys to do drunk podcasts. But no, we do have one. It's probably out already by the time you hear this. Me and Dave Sharp and Ryan Schmidt, author of the Wristwatch Handbook, so he tells us. But no, this has been a great hour. Thanks very much for your time, guys, and we will catch you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.